This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The majority of this show was recorded after the Crystal Palace defeat, so that is the context for what you are about to hear. We've slotted in a quick reaction to the Spurs victory after our intro and before the show begins in earnest with the Villa news.
We analysed the match. The team has been so effective in the first half.
First half was good, but second half was shit.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. And joining me to discuss, there's only 1 week left, people, until the end of the season, Mr. Chris Bird. Welcome back.
Hello, mate. How are you? How was your weekend?
Oh, it was going well for the first half. Second half just fizzled out.
These sort of Jekyll and Hyde weekends, David, they're happening too often now, aren't they?
Also joining us, Mr. Phil Shaw. Thank you for flying in all the way from Northern Ireland.
Hello.
Oh, the wonders of modern technology.
I know.
How was your weekend, Mr. Shaw?
It was okay. I went a trip to the beach. I thought that's the sort of thing you do this time of year. So
you should stop copying the behavioural patterns of the team you support. I know you like to be influenced easily, but I think that's taken it too far. Mr. Bird, how are you?
I'm all right, man. Not too bad at all.
Are you looking forward to, not only is it 1 week to go to the end of the season, but also, I don't know about our friend over the Irish Sea, but we can go into bricks and mortar buildings now, can we not?
We can. We can actually eat in restaurants and drinking pubs and all that sort of crap. Yeah. See how long it lasts, mine, but it's looking a bit more positive.
You can just get a good week's drinking in before you get to see Villa play if you got a ticket.
We have another week before we can go inside to eat or drink. So with the weather we've had this week, you've seen people sitting outside braving the conditions, like temporary sort of shelters that the restaurants and things have built to let you eat outside, just getting blown everywhere and rain at butcher.
Well, have you had tornadoes or something?
It hasn't been great.
Never mind. At least there was Villa playing on Sunday lunchtime to brighten up your weekend. Before we get on to that game, we will look at the latest Villa news from our glorious youth team. March, just making short work of this FA Youth Cup this season, it has to be said. The end of season fallout from the Villa women's team as well. In the 3 points, all kinds of things happening there in Holland. Also, a certain player in the Premier League joins a very elite club, and Tom Cruise helping out grassroots football as well. And then obviously we'll pick through the bones of what happened at Selhurst Park before getting into an under or overrated, discussing another goalkeeper. It's a bit of a habit we've had.
Weird theme this one, isn't it?
Yeah, a bit of a trend in the recent few weeks, but this time it is Mr. Gabor Kerali. Remember him? In terms of English football, played mostly for Palace before having a wee emergency stint at Aston Villa. Right, before we go on with the show properly, let's just go into the future and let's have a quick reaction to the victory at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Hurrah!
Are we going down the same path as the Houllier season, where we managed out of nowhere to beat Liverpool and Arsenal in the last 2 days? Can we beat Chelsea as well, who hopefully have one eye on that Champions League game? Just quickly then, major shifts in formation, some of them through injuries, but the main thing was, well, there's two main things, wasn't there? There was Grealish returning to the starting lineup and playing in a kind of a number 10 position more centrally, and also the defence got a bit of a rejig with Mings returning back, thankfully, and it was Konsa, who's played at right back a few times. You may have remembered going out to the right back position and Courtney Hawes keeping his place, and Nakemba coming in to the fold. First impressions of that, and why did it go so right in the first half?
Balance, I suppose. You know, Jack means you can retain the ball. Nakemba means you can win the ball. It was kind of, I think Phil said previously, you know, we haven't done the simple things well for a while. Nakamba does the simple things well, and then Jack gets on the ball, and I think we just had a little bit more balance to the team. I think Konsa at right back made us a little bit more solid. It was more like a flat back four rather than wing backs who were going to bomb on and get involved.
Because Elmo got a bit roasted against Palace, didn't he? And yeah, there was a chance for that to happen again against Spurs. Yeah. Phil?
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, Elmo would have been up against Son, and sort of all the talks about Harry Kane, but Son's very much sort of the instigator. He'd have been the live threat. But I thought Konsa did very well at right back. Whenever Spurs were putting the ball into the box, Konsa almost became a third centre back. I mean, between him, Hawes and Mings, one of them were always getting a block on it or a header or something. But, you know, it worked. I mean, it might be something for the future, but you just don't know. It's another option.
To me, there was a sense that Spurs just thought, if they played the game here, they win this game. Because one of the things Palace did, they pressed, let's say, not our, it was an unsettled defensive lineup that we fielded against Palace. And some ways, like, Palace planned for that. Here, similar thing. You know, we're doing something slightly different in that reshuffle. But some ways, like, Spurs just turned up, thought, well, if we play our game, we've got too much for these guys. And in the midfield, they lacked any intensity. There's this pocket of space, which Grealish was exploiting it, you know, almost at will. McGinn got into it as well, yeah, running at
like
them.
His old self, didn't he?
Yeah, and it was good to see McGinn, let's say, getting into trouble in their area, despite Grealish also being in the same team. So it's not as if he has to play in a kind of a deeper fixed role. He can get amongst it.
Yeah, but if anything, Spurs scoring so early, it made them take the foot even more off the gas.
Yeah, and that's quite significant because, well, you tell me, Chris.
What is it, the first time since August 2013 Villa have won away in the Premier League from a position of going behind? Which is, 52 games? That's crazy.
Yeah, winless in 52 games. They've gone behind away from home in the Prem.
52 fucking games. I mean, that's unbelievable. It's like a season and a half of football.
It needs an expletive in there just to give it.
Doesn't need punctuation, doesn't it?
Give it the gravitas of shame that it deserves.
But, I mean, when their goal goes in, which is a shocking goal, and we won't dwell on it too much, but it's a poor goal. Again, you thought, oh, another Villa gift wrap goal. It's going to be one of those nights again. But actually, it woke us up. Nakamba made the initial mistake. But after that, I actually thought his game was flawless. He was maybe you could say our man of the match. I thought he had a really good game. Him and McGinn in the middle were great for us. And then once we got level with the bizarre own goal, we kind of grew into the game, didn't we?
Yeah, I think if we weren't reshuffled at the back, we might have sorted that out even, you know, after Nakamba.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, Smith, in a post-match, Smith came out and said that Nakamba was given a poor call. Somebody told him he had more time than he had. So
Right.
It didn't look like that at the time, but Smith's come out afterwards, and then he obviously said he went on to have an excellent game the rest of his performance.
Yeah.
I thought they all did, to be fair. Even though I think the two wide men were inconsistent, but wide men can be. But actually, I thought as a collective, they all played really well. They all put a shift in, especially when Spurs had that little spell at the start of the second half where they got up ahead of steam for 10, 15 minutes. And you thought, oh, you know, this could be another one of our standard second half performances. But actually, we weathered it and came through it.
Their goal, I thought it was fantastic. Their goal for us was fantastic. I think it's
unbelievable finish.
I mean, it's one of the top five goals of the season for us. It's he dispatched it with aplomb.
Amazing.
It was,
and then not only did he do it once, he gifted us a second. It's like a nice one.
Yeah, there he got a thirst for it, didn't he? He got a taste for it. He thought, yeah, fuck, but a shit season for Spurs. Let's get an assist and a goal for Villa. Uh-huh.
He's better stats than some of our players.
I think, at least get in the Villa end of season stats table. So if I can't make any impression on the Spurs
ones. He gifts us sort of the two goals. I mean, I think Watkins takes the chance really, really well. It's clinical. But then you think, even before half-time, we should have gone in really 4-1 up. We had the chances. Yeah. And then even going through the second half, it was chance after chance for Villa.
End of game stats is 20 shots for Villa to Spurs' 10.
I mean, that's incredible to go to Spurs and play them off the park in that manner. And then
both teams had 4 shots on target, but there was a lot of incidents where, whether it be Traore or even McGinn at one stage and Grealish, where they'd beat 3 players, and it was just that, Traore was in that situation where it's almost like he was deciding which foot he should take the shot with, and then it just closed down for him.
And we haven't even mentioned that there was a very good shout for a penalty as well when the goalkeeper took out Watkins. I mean, the ball might have been going out, but I mean, I do remember Harry Kane at Villa Park. The ball was already gone whenever he collided with Cash, and that was a penalty. So
when he was cute.
Yeah.
I thought Watkins, his goal, same again, what he did, was it against
Everton goal?
Yeah, it was the Everton goal.
Work right now.
Where he just closes them down and forces them into mistakes. And, yeah. It's a massive kind of attribute, and means we're almost defending at the top of the pitch, but at the same time creating things out of nothing.
Yes. And then, you get into the second half, we had more chances, and then, right towards the end, they bring the two young lads off the bench with, sort of 5 minutes to go. And you think, it's great to see them, and it's good that they're getting a run out. But at that moment in the game, you think with sort of 5 minutes of stoppage time to go away at Tottenham, on the face of it, you'd say it's probably not the time to blood the kids, but actually they both came on, didn't they? And they looked so composed. They got their foot on the ball and carried it, which is exactly what we needed at the time. And obviously Chukwueze had the chance and hits the post.
Yeah, I mean, because it's a bit of a nothing game, I kind of understood why he would do it, but I maybe he didn't expect there to be like 6 minutes of injury time. At the same time, even if Spurs scored, it's a draw. I don't think they looked like they were going to get two. But both players were probably the most composed Villa players I've seen all season, actually. They'd looked like they'd been playing for years, and it's looked like, these are the specialists that we actually bring on to just take control of the game.
Yeah, Philo Jean Bidas. I mean, one that he took into the corner near the end, his facial expression was like, it was almost as if he was just out for a stroll in the park. I mean, Spurs players were closing him down. He's just wait, and play it back, get it back again, just like that. Just killed the game.
Yeah, it was an era of, we took Nakamba and Luiz off, who were meant to be sort of your closers, and you've pulled Jack off, who, these are guys who are all meant to keep hold of the ball. And actually, the two young lads come on, and they're just like, don't worry, lads, we've got this. We actually play in a team every week that plays passing football.
That's better than yours.
but they did fantastic. It's really good to finish such a positive result with a real sort of, it's almost like the cherry on top getting...
Oi, Grealish, watch and learn.
Yeah, and they're all waving at Barkley going, you won't be here next year, sunshine. I'm having your number 8 shirt as well.
Yeah. You're not even coming back on the coach, Barkley. You're already in London. Just start walking.
Yeah, even though we've got a cup final coming up, we thought we'd help out Dean Smith.
Yeah, you're welcome, Dean.
You're welcome. But I thought they adapted really well. I mean, even like Chukwueze's shot was, that's not like, rabbit in the headlights.
Yeah, it was almost like Yaya Toure-esque. He just passed it.
It's very nonchalant. I mean, if that went in, we'd be...
well, then we'd be retiring the shirt, frankly.
We didn't go overboard. It was only they only had four or five touches each, but enough to know that they're not bedazzled by this level.
Well, and it's nice as a way to sort of end our away campaign this season that we've gone to Arsenal 1, Tottenham and 1, Chelsea and got a draw against the three big London clubs where traditionally we haven't done that well.
Yeah,
we've got three really good results this season.
Well, yeah, we were talking in Match Club actually about if you want to throw another positive, there's youngest Premier League starting 11, average age and what we've seen, what we're capable of, and you know, obviously some of the younger players growing into their role at Villa. But you know, another big thing is once we get up to speed, you've still got to get that mentality right of actually, you know, you can buy two or three other top players and you're thinking, yeah, we'll beat your Fulhams, your Brightons, whatever, but you've still got to get that mentality that you are a team that's good enough to beat the traditional top teams. And that's what we've done this season. We've beaten Liverpool, we've beaten Arsenal twice, we've beaten Spurs. And this all helps the longer, long-term game of next season and the seasons to come.
It gives them the belief now, isn't it, that they can compete, even just ahead of Sunday. It means they can go into that Chelsea game knowing, actually, we can just throw the kitchen sink at them on Sunday.
But anyway, before we get into...
whinging about Palace.
talking about the Chelsea game in the future, let's just go back to the past, and we will now flip back to the normal show, which was a little bit delayed coming out. We recorded it straight after, but things cropped up this week. We just held it up just so we could fit in the Spurs game as well. Right, shall we get into the Villa news? First of all, update on the injuries. As we expected, Maddie Cash is out for the season. It was a hamstring, was it not?
Yes. Yeah.
Meanwhile, there's an extra fixture for us all to watch. Aston Villa's youth team just soldiered through to the Youth Cup final, where they'll play Liverpool. Ironically, the Villa youth team have already played the first team of Liverpool. Now they get to play the guys that are their own age.
I know, yeah. It's a bit of a strange narrative, that, isn't it? Obviously, after Liverpool playing our seniors, you know, a couple last season, our juniors played their seniors this season. So now we'll see what they're really made of.
Yeah, Villa have literally blitzed everybody off the field. So it would be interesting to see what resistance Liverpool can offer. Moving on to the women's team, we know what happened with them as they stayed up. But it's over the last week, it's been a trickle of all out, really. Hashtag all out, as pretty much all the key backroom staff have left, from head coach Gemma Davis, her assistant manager Jenny Sugarman, to Marcus Bignot, who I think he was only going to be there to the end of the season anyway.
Yeah, he was just like a sort of a caretaker role, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then Enya Luko has also left, and it looks like she's off to the new, and we've mentioned these guys before, the Los Angeles-based new women's team, Angel City, which has... actresses like Jessica Chastain, Natalie Portman. Is Jennifer Garner behind it as well?
I'm not sure.
I think. We mentioned these earlier on, but she's going to join them in some capacity, probably in a similar sporting director role, I would imagine. So good luck to her, although hopefully she's learnt a few things about Twitter.
Yeah.
I don't know how the women's season is viewed, because such a mass exodus that do you think they expected to do a little bit better? I mean, staying up was obviously the name of the game.
They brought in a whole new team, didn't they, really? They basically built a team from scratch, like a first-year professional team. And you know, it was only, 2 years ago they had the first professional player. So you'd say just to stay up is an achievement.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. There must be some method behind the madness of everybody. I'm not saying they were pushed, but you know what I mean. Everybody leaving, so we'll see what transpires there. Right, let's get to the 3 points. First of all, speaking of women's football, over in Holland, women will be able to play in senior men's teams as of next season. The Dutch Federation have announced, which is it's a very interesting move in terms of the kind of context of football and what's been happening in terms of the evolution of the women's game. Mixed football has been in place in the Netherlands since 1986, with boys and girls playing together up until about the age of 12. I think that happens
in most
places. Yeah, in terms of like younger age. This was extended in Holland to older age groups within category B clubs, that's like the lower teams, since 1995, before it was introduced in category A youth sides a year later. So I think, is this just amateur football?
Yes, but it's the first time it's like senior amateur football.
Yeah.
I'm torn in this one because there's no problem with it, but what does it do to the women's game? I mean, if a player was going to be, you know, a good professional in the women's game, suddenly to be play for a higher amateur league men's team instead of playing in the women's team, I just don't know if it advances the women's game as a whole.
Yeah, well, as in the best players get picked out of it.
Yeah, potentially.
I'm not sure how the Dutch football pyramid works, but I mean, if the women are allowed to play in the amateur teams, is there a potential for that amateur team to get promoted into one of the professional leagues? So,
yeah, it could be quite an interesting path. Or if, you know, for example, if you're a very, you know, like an exceptional, for instance, someone like an Ajax women's player, is it necessarily making a living from the game? Is it in your interest to say, well, actually, I want to test myself in the men's game, but actually, financially, it makes more sense to stay where I am potentially? It makes for an interesting dynamic, I think.
Maybe they can do both, like the darts player, you know, Sherrick. She played in women's, but she qualified and won in the men's. So
right, yeah.
Yeah, you know, the physicality side of things, what always comes into question, like, for example, I think darts and snooker, there's not really a problem there, is there?
And even sports like, you know, sort of golf, tennis,
cricket. When it comes to like tennis, it's tennis would be a little bit different because you just got to look at the speed of you know, serves of men to women. There's obviously a massive advantage, especially on grass courts. But, you know, that's what makes mixed doubles kind of interesting. But anyway, it's definitely, I think, you know, there's the saying, and it applies to young players in the current game, is if you're good enough,
Absolutely.
doesn't matter what the situation is. Point number two, it's the sixth person to do it, is he not? Liverpool's goalkeeper Alisson became just the sixth Premier League goalkeeper to score a goal in a match with his last gasp header against the Baggies.
Unbelievable. Great header. I mean, if like, you know, a 6 foot plus defender would be proud of this. It was towering. You know, it's like a 95th minute. Liverpool need to win this game. And you kind of thought, are they going to take the risk here? And they are. They obviously pulled out one of the short-arse defenders, said, go and stand on the halfway line, we'll send the goalie up.
Yeah.
Alisson gets stuck in. West Brom's defending is pretty woeful. They just forget to mark him. So, of course, he gets involved, runs to the near post, flicks his header into the top corner. It's a brilliant header. Cue chaos in the stands and on the pitch. It was brilliant.
Say, Bird, on something for the weekend? What did I say? Liverpool not out of it yet.
They're not now. They're right
not
back
when they've
it.
Got. Not when they've got the salmon.
Yeah.
And we did talk before about like the mentality it shows to send your goalkeeper up in these things. It's a good mentality to show.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll get into that in a minute. But I think there is these teams, like, you know, your traditional teams like Manchester United, Liverpool, they don't accept defeat, do they? And
Or even a draw for Liverpool. I mean, a draw today would have been not catastrophic, but not. No, far from ideal. Now it,
and that's,
it puts some
Villa
right
need
back
a bit more of that, a bit more of, don't tell me the odds, you know, just do it.
Yeah.
Two ex-Villa goalkeepers in that group of six.
Yeah. Friedl and Schmeichel, who actually joined an even more elite club with Alisson, they're the only three who actually did it in the opposition box, because Paul Robinson, Begovic from Stoke, and Tim Howard, they all scored from the more wacky, you know, goal kicks from their own box. Took the wind and flew
Gust
in over the
wind,
goal.
Yeah.
Whereas the other one, especially, I mean, the Schmeichel one he absolutely nailed it, didn't he, at Goodison Park? Yeah. And Friedl, I remember, scored for Blackburn at, I think it was Charlton. But Alisson's is easily the best of the goals in terms of actual technical
technique.
Yeah.
Pick of the brilliant. Bunch.
Right, point number three. Woburn and Waverton Football Club weren't too happy when Tom Cruise and Mission Impossible 7's film crew turned up to use the patch of, well, it's their Bedfordshire sports ground where they play their games and train, where they used it to shoot the latest Mission Impossible 7. Normally in those situations, they you know, these are big film productions, they just throw money and tell you, right, you know, we'll have it for 2 weeks, here's some compensation money. But the way the press have spun it, this football club were disappointed that they were booted off, and normally it's like, yeah, Hollywood productions come in, we're going to get X amount of grand. Anyway, to smooth over the situation, and it's probably part of the deal anyway, Mr. Tom Cruise agreed to sign some of these Woburn and Waverton football club shirts to be put towards the team's £12,000 crowdfunding campaign because they've been badly hit, as has most grassroots football by the COVID situation. So they're hoping that the money that these Tom Cruise, I mean, what they are, they're signed shirts, framed, big, massive Tom Cruise signature. It's almost as big as a sponsor's.
Almost as big as him?
Badge would be. And then it's framed, nicely presented with a couple of stills from Mission Impossible 7, the production of. And yeah, hopefully the sale of the shirts will help with their crowdfunding campaign towards the club's community initiatives. Nice one, Tom, or the Cruiser, as we used to call him back in the day when I was at a film magazine. Right, to the meat and gravy of the show, the match reaction. We're not going to talk about the context of the season and because we've done that, but we'll save that to the end of the season because we'll just be doing it in the, you know, for the next couple of podcasts. So we'll save the is it a successful season, Dean Smith's situation, what does he learn from it, etc., until after the season closes, so we've got the whole 38 games to reflect back.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Going into this game, I think we really needed to beat Everton before it to have any chance of the top half finish, just because Leeds have just been burning it up, haven't they?
Yeah, they've had a great
before this game. I mean, they beat Spurs, but then they beat Burnley 4-0 away from home. They just haven't let the intensity drop. So, you know, we've signed off for the lower half after that Everton game, but definitely needed to win this game to have any chance of, you know, pull out a couple of miracle wins against Spurs and Chelsea. And, you know, there's half a chance, but you know, the other teams have got easy-ish fixture lists.
Yep.
Anyways, looked at that starting lineup, you thought, yeah, we're looking a bit light there. Main reason, Mings still a bit sore from his clash with Martinez, and as mentioned in the Villa news, Ramsey also drafted in as well. Grealish, as expected, on the bench. Dean Smith's just drip feeding him into proceedings until the end of the season. It's more to nurse him back for the England picture, I would say. But despite reservations, I mean, I always said this: Crystal Palace is like a retirement home for players that once were, you know, let's say in or about their international teams. Always kind of muted for like big moves, or you know, they're all were tearing it up at clubs and then just have fell for grace. So it's almost like they come to Palace because on their reputations, and when they get to Palace, it's like, well, you know, those glory days are over, and they kind of lose a little bit of impetus. So if you can keep the game boring, almost, that's the way to deal with Palace. But in the first half, Villa, you know, pretty much blitzed them, didn't they?
Played really well, looked really good with the ball, started lively. Deservedly, obviously, took the lead. We'd had obviously fired a couple of warning shots before that, and you thought, oh, we look pretty good here again in the first half.
Yeah, I think McGinn and Watkins, especially, I thought, in terms of up front, they were causing Palace all kinds of problems, and they were popping up all over the place as well.
Yeah.
And you know, those two were real prime movers for anything good in the first half.
Yeah, and Target as well was putting a good few crosses in. He was getting forward from left back. Elmo as well put a decent cross in that I don't know how the defender stopped. Watkins with an easy header it would have been, but he just got in front of him. So like you said, everything was going well.
And you're thinking Butland's in goal for them as well.
Yeah, so. He's always got a chance. And then really, if anything, that us taking the lead just changed the game a little bit. We just stopped and kind of let them play. It was almost like, right, we've got the lead. We'll sit back and try and hit on the break now. We could have actually just gone in for the kill before half time.
Yeah, because in previous games against Palace, they've been kind of grindy results. And that's what I just said at the start. It didn't really spark them into life. But here, it's a little bit, hitting the hornet's nest a little bit. But they were, they were very much on the beach, you were thinking. But Benteke is a man reborn at the moment. And
you almost knew he was going to score. And it was a typical Benteke-esque goal, wasn't it, when they got the equaliser? They'd kind of grown into the game a little bit. And it almost didn't come as that much of a surprise when they scored. A bit like the Villa had done earlier. They'd fired a couple of warning shots and then little ball to the back post. Benteke leaps like we used to see him regularly do for Villa with a really good header across the...
To be fair, it was a good ball as well.
Yeah, and in that kinda, position
took,
with Hawes,
took him out of the game, didn't it?
Yeah, and when Benteke's jumping over him, he's always gonna win that header. And but then luckily, we came straight back, and you thought, right, this is more like it what we've seen from Villa, because more recently, of course, whenever we've had a knock, be it a goal conceded or whatever, we've kind of just crumbled and caved in. We actually went up the other end and got an equaliser, and El Ghazi took his. I mean, it's a chance you'd expect him to take, but I thought he finished it really clinically, and you thought you're going in two on up.
Watkins was the pivotal man, I think.
Yeah, Watkins
in there.
Did well.
Cahill didn't know where the ball was at all. He just tried to put Watkins off doing whatever he thought Watkins was going to do.
And you sort of go in two on up, and you think, right, we've done well. That's a reasonably good first half's work. Even though Palace were well in the game, you kind of thought, maybe next goal wins. If we get the third here, that'll kill the game. And
Smith very happy, said, going in at half-time. Maybe too happy.
Yeah, but even people on Match Club mentioned the dreaded B word as well. They said, hope it's not another
bastard.
Burnley.
not calling Smith a bastard.
No, they just got
disgraceful.
Beach.
We should bar those people. Yeah, I thought, the B word is beach, isn't it?
Burnley,
yeah, sorry, Burnley, yeah. Beach, Burnley, it's all the same.
You just, as soon as the second half started, Palace stepped up the pitch a bit, pressed us. I hate using the word press, but they closed us down more in our own half, and we just didn't have an answer. We couldn't get out.
To be fair, that's all you got to do against Villa is really close them down, especially when Mings wasn't there and you've got cash out as well. So it's a makeshift, half of the defence is makeshift. I would have pressed Villa for sure in this game.
And without those two, you lack dynamism, don't you, defensively?
Yeah, those two are the... let's say the kind of thunder of the back four.
And actually, they're the two players that get you out the most. Cash can carry the ball at pace, and Mings can ping a ball sort of beyond into the channels.
Yeah, left to right and etc. We were. I mean, there was a crazy amount of efforts. I think is it the second most shots on target this season?
Yeah, it was a pretty
in any
game.
23 for Palace, 19 for Villa.
Yeah, it was a very entertaining first half. It's just unfortunate that, what went on to transpire in the second half.
Yeah, one thing that's becoming a theme is our lack of profit, I suppose, from set pieces and corners.
Really poor, isn't it?
We're starting to get our heads onto things in terms of corners. Courtney Howes had a decent attempt, but we're just not getting enough end result from set pieces, and this is something that does need addressing. And we do need somebody to step up, whether we have to sign him or it's something that Grealish feels like he can bring to his game. Somebody's got to take real responsibility for these set pieces. Rather than, whoever can hit a half-decent corner, we need to get specialists dedicated to that and free kicks as well to, train purposely for it.
It's hard to put a finger on actually what's going wrong with the corners. I mean, you'd love to be a fly on the wall in the, the training through the week because are they overcomplicating how they attack it and things like that? They're trying to be, it's, put it in the mixer. We've said it before. It's one of those things and put it into the sort of that 6-yard box area, keep it away from the keeper and, get people to attack it. I mean, it isn't rocket science, which is why
some of the players we've got.
Yeah, which is why teams traditionally that play, ugly football and are lower down in the league tables, that's why they use set pieces. I mean, it isn't hard.
There's a few short corners, isn't there?
I mean, we love to fuck around with the ball by the corner flag, don't we, to be fair? And that probably counts at both ends of the field sometimes. I mean, to be fair, the other theme, you talk about second half, the theme of Villa being bad in the second half. I mean, geez, if a season could map out games, we seem to just go in at half time. And whether we're content, I don't know what it is, but we don't seem to come out in the second half and hit the ground running very often at the moment.
Yeah, just going back to those first half goals, El Ghazi has now scored 7 goals in 14 away appearances in the Premier League this season, which that's pretty impressive considering what a kind of how most fans view him as kind of a patchy player. I mean, if you were any player to get 7 goals in 14 away appearances, that's pretty sensational level of scoring, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Nobody's impressed, though. Not impressed, Chris? Phil?
I like El Ghazi, and you know he's a finisher. He's a results. I mean, he's finally shown the player that we were told that he was last season. Like some of these training ground finishes, but
yeah.
He's a conundrum. He's like all our players at sometimes.
Yeah, even Smith's come out and said if we can get him, consistency. He'll be a hell of a player, and we've seen, as Phil said, we've seen glimmers that he can be. The fact that he got rewarded by a Holland called up suggests other people, rate him as well. It's just about him maintaining that.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Christian Benteke, that was his 31st headed goal in the Premier League, which makes him joint 9th in the all-time list of headed goals in the Premier League. Level with Tim Cahill, who, for somebody who was only about 5'10", scored a shitload of goals with his head.
He just used to get in where it was ugly, didn't he? He just used to throw himself
at the ball. I mean, he used to time his runs sensationally. Yeah. Dion Dublin's third with 45. Alan Shearer, 46 second, and I would ask you who was number one, but you already know it's Peter Crouch with 53. I don't remember him scoring that many headed goals, to be honest. I mean, I know he was like 8'9", but he used to score a lot with his feet, didn't he?
He had a good touch for a big man.
Yeah, I just laid that one up for the king of the cliches to dispatch into the roof of the net.
Teed it up, smashed it down the fairway.
So what went wrong in the second half? Can anybody enlighten us?
Just intensity just dropped, didn't it? And obviously Palace were always going to be better, but we just didn't have an answer. The whole thing just suggested that Villa sat in the change room at half time and went, all right, well, we've played well there, more of the same.
It's almost like they eat their Sunday dinner in the change room at half time and they just come out stodgy and bloated in the second half. I mean, that's
a bit of a food coma.
Yeah, Palace just up their game, and Villa actually got away with murder with some of the chances that Palace had before they equalised. I mean, they carved out some really good chances with a couple of wonder saves from Martinez again.
Well,
it was a game that's typified so many this season in terms of we talk about two halves in terms of the whole season, in terms of many games, and Villa have got themselves into good positions. I mean, this is the context of it, the real context. I mean, after a great start, we're talking like globally now, like the whole league table in terms of where we were, great start in that respect. But throughout games, they've shown themselves capable enough to the extent that, those three big games we've played recently against Manchester City, Liverpool, Manchester United, we were ahead in all of those games. So it's not as if we're, you can't dismiss us as non-entities. There's enough there to get a foothold in games. But it's the mentality of not being able to hang on. And, we saw that, probably the best example of that Liverpool game where, yet again, conceding in injury time when just see it out, see it out.
Yeah, it's the thing, we did the best in the first half of the season. We had an unbelievable record, probably the best in the league. And I think we've still got one of the best records in the league for goals in the first 15 minutes. We start well.
Yeah, so, I mean, we hadn't dropped a single point. I mean, it's the whole 2020 form versus the 2021 form. 2020 form, we hadn't dropped a single point from a winning position before the turn of the year. I mean, that shows you what kind of form we were in. And then since then, we've dropped 19 points from winning positions in 2021, which is the joint most of any side in the top four tiers of English football. We're alongside the esteemed company of Warsaw and Wigan Athletic in that respect. I mean, people go, fitness, blah, blah, blah. But most of these teams are, these are Premier athletes and fitness is the business. It's not that. It's mainly kind of a mental thing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's mentality.
It's what Chris said. I mean, it only takes one thing to go against Villa. And this one, it was the deflection off Elmo for Zaha's equaliser. As soon as that goes in, they didn't create anything after that.
No. I mean, I thought just before they got the goal, obviously they brought Jack on. It was about 65 minutes, wasn't it, the Grealish substitution?
Yeah.
And Palace had been getting up ahead of steam, and then we'd had about 5 minutes where we just got back into the game, started getting a bit of territory and possession in their half, and you thought, right, we might have weathered the storm here. We've done a reasonable job in getting through it. Now we can push on, bring your attacking players on, and actually try and kill the game. Because I think if we'd have got the third at that point, it would have killed the game.
Yeah, no, that was obviously the Grealish substitution at that stage was a reaction to what was happening on the pitch. Yeah.
And get our foot on the bloody ball.
They just had too much pressure because, A, we just gave it away straight away and we were getting bamboozled.
Yeah, and then the equaliser's poor. And then, I mean, and the winner's even worse. It's just poor goals. Again, but then again, I mean, we said we're not going to talk about league context, but it's becoming a bit Groundhog Day, isn't it? Where it's kind of every week it's the same things, but... It's a shame because I think we put ourselves into a really good position, in the Palace game where you thought, actually, this would have been a really good one to either just see it out to show you can do that or go ahead, get the third, and then you can enjoy the last, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, 2021 now, the most extreme people that say, context, we barely survived last season, this is an improvement. Well, actually, it's fast not becoming, because if you just look at this year, and then we obviously kick off next season in this year, there's a situation where you look at and this is over 22 games Villa have played. Villa have actually played one more game than most teams as well. Anyway, we're in 15th place in terms of form for this year, and this is... 22 games, won 6 in 22 games, lost half of those games, 11. So this is not a good look. And we were talking about Villa in terms of earlier on in the season as add a couple more players to this, a couple of quality players to this, and you've got a team that's really knocking on the door in Europe. Now we're thinking, well, I mean, we discussed this a little bit in Match Club. We're not going to repeat it here. We'll save that to the end of the season. But the good news is we have some solid foundations in terms of the defence and the goalkeeper.
Real genuine progress has been made.
Yeah, and we have a striker who's got into an England team because he is, at times it's like playing with two strikers up front in terms of the pressure he can put on the opponent's back line if they try playing it out. But I think, we discussed a couple of shows ago that I think if you can get the right midfield balance in, you're looking at a player in Watkins who's going to get 20 goals a season.
Oh, the more service you give him, the more he'll score goals. We've seen that.
Because he's doing a lot on his own back to, fashion opportunities to get where he was. But, even if you factor in this season, the amount of offside goals.
And woodwork, especially.
Vaz shafted him. Woodwork is about 8, I think it is.
Yeah.
2 or 3 VAR decisions. So he's almost there anyway. But if you can get that midfield right, and that is the big issue because we've bought a few players and, we have them in the squad also that are existing players that are around you. They're kind of 6 out of 10 jobs. And it's going to be interesting to see how unsentimental Villa are in terms of, right, we need to upgrade and sort this midfield out. Because to his credit, Smith did sit down, sort the defensive situation out last season. And that's paid off this season big time. So it's now a matter of addressing the most important thing, which seemed to be okay last, early doors. But the balance seemed to be better. Louise knew what he was doing and was playing all right. And now we're in a situation where it's, the questions are, where do you play McGinn, if at all? But McGinn actually plays in a position best where you perhaps can't play him if everybody's fit. It's a bit of a conundrum.
I thought he actually took the responsibility of being captain quite well, especially in the first half, where you could tell he played a very similar role to the one he does for Scotland, where he just drove the team forward, got involved, got his goal, really well taken goal, by the way. But then you saw the other side where he's having to almost carry people. I mean, there's real question marks around young Ramsey for me in terms of if you're going to give him the role he's got, where he essentially has to take the game by the scruff of the neck, bearing in mind, Sanson's come in and failed to do it. Barkley's had endless opportunities this side of Christmas to do it since his injury, has failed to do it, bar that Everton game. Is he going to be where we need to be next year in a really key position? Is he up to scratch? And I for me, I don't know if I see him getting to that level at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just look at the touch count in terms of his involvement. I mean, just for context, El Ghazi had 54 touches, McGinn 60, Traore 41, Dougie Louise 59, and Ramsey's 37. I mean, that's why, well, he went off at the 84th minute, but 37, yeah. He's not, you know, his pass completion 79, which isn't exactly great. And it just seems to be something passive about, I mean, he's tidy.
He's a very tidy player.
And that's why he's around, but there needs to be a little bit more, I don't know.
Dynamism, yeah.
What's the saying? Like, he needs a unique selling point. What is his unique? What's his USP? What is it? I mean, I don't want to do him down because of his age, but, and again, I don't think if Sanson had to come in and lit the place up, if Barkley had still been lighting the place up, I don't think you'd have seen as much of Ramsey, and he could have got, you know, 15 here, 20 there. But he's having to maybe carry more weight than he should at this stage in his career,
or can at the moment.
We
discussed it in Match Club. You know, he's you think about where does he play? He's almost a little bit nondescript in terms of, he's definitely not a six for me in terms of his stature. Is he a 10? Well, you wouldn't play him over McGinn or Grealish at the moment in that kind of role to really take the game to the opposition. He's not really an eight who's going to get box to box and run the game for you. He's kind of a bit of a bits and pieces midfielder, which frankly, Louise is like that, McGinn's like that. And I think you mentioned it in previous shows, David, that we've almost got too much of the same thing, that are lots of not quite anything players. You almost want like a specialist six, a specialist eight, a specialist seven.
Because from what I've seen from Ramsey and Sanson so far, they're very, very similar. And at the moment, when Ramsey's actually worked, it's almost like when we've played the Graham Fenton card, where you need somebody young with a bit of legs to get around the midfield just to close the opposition
he's
down a bit.
He's actually quite good off the bench, isn't he? Because he gives you that little burst of energy, and he gets around and he's busy and he puts his foot on the ball and wants to play. And that's where fine if that's going to be his role, so be it. But as a starter, you're having to sort of carry more weight, aren't you?
Yeah, and as you just said, I think it was, you know, what I said in Match Club as well, it's that if the Villa, let's say, first team midfielders were stepping up, then you'd see Ramsey being drip fed into the team rather than starting. So, I mean, long term it may pay off and the experience may seem well, but he just needs to, stamp his authority on the or identity on the game a bit more.
Yeah, we're looking for end product now.
Yeah. In terms of Grealish,
tough game for him. We just didn't give him the ball, did we?
Right, just before we kick on to the final closing segment, just going back to that, how games pan out after Villa have scored the first goal. Aston Villa have lost four of the past seven league matches when scoring first. Prior to that, they had won 12 of their first 13 league matches this season after scoring first. So it's a massive contrast. Right, time for underrated or overrated? Right then, this is the player still. Is he just retired recently?
Yeah,
Yeah,
I believe so. He was playing till 2019, wasn't he?
So he's 45 now, so he'd be playing till like 43. Mr. Corelli, remember him? He played five league games for Aston Villa, then a cup game against Manchester United, that he allowed the ball to squeam through. I think it was an Ole Gunnar Solskjaer shot in the final minutes at Old Trafford, when the young centre-back pairing of Ridgewell and Cahill had kept them off. I think it was 1-1 at that stage. And
why did we sell Cahill again?
Yeah, why did we sell Cahill? Never mind this Hungarian pyjama-wearing goalkeeper clown. Why did we sell Cahill? So let me ask the question, never mind Cahill, why did we get Corelli in?
Well, it was an emergency
basically.
Yeah. And what I was just going to say was, even worse, if you're remembering about that Villa United game, what we actually had to get special permission for the loan to be extended for him to play in that game. So that was well worth asking for it.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. That was the icing on the cake, wasn't it? Oh, great. We could have just played anybody, and there's a good chance we'd have got a draw and taken them back to Villa Park when some of our defence might have returned back from injury.
Yeah, so we needed him because Sorensen was injured and Stuart Taylor had aggravated a knee injury. So they were both out, and we only had Robert Olenicic. I can't remember.
Yeah,
he was just the youth keeper, so...
I thought he was going to say he was just useless. So we had to get an emergency in. So sorry, but for an emergency, it has to be an emergency. Now, this guy's really useless. It's an emergency. It's a real emergency. He's just useless.
Yeah, so in case of emergency, break glass and bring out the tracksuit bottoms.
Yeah, which became his trademark, and he embraced them. Do we know why he used to wear them? Did that?
Well, he started wearing them because of the crap pitches in Hungary, apparently, where it was just, you know, did a lot of training on crap pitches and obviously probably relatively cold, and it was just to protect his legs to begin with.
Yeah, and then, you know, this, it's in decisions like this that your whole life is defined. He had two pairs of tracksuit bottoms, he had a black pair and a grey pair, and the black ones hadn't been washed by the club, and did again the next day, so he wore the grey ones in the one. So, and superstition, he kept wearing the grey ones from then on.
And a career was born.
But the grey ones became brown ones when Scholes hit that rocket past him.
Yeah.
What a goal that was. It's one of the few times I've actually stood up in a ground and applauded the opposition.
And did you applaud Corelli's
floundering effort?
Bottoms turning from grey to brown.
He made it look even better. You always like a goal like that going in when the keeper just flops about
in
midair.
Yeah, it was like one of those Hollywood dives, wasn't it, that just increases the stock of the goal tenfold.
It had everything, and it hit the underside of the bar and went in. It was like, it's Hollywood perfection.
Yeah, and then the time sort of, he got back to his feet and sort of like had that look behind him, like, what's going on? What's happened?
Any outstanding memories, actually? I mean, I think we've just spoken about his outstanding memories with the mistake against Manu. Both of them, where the ball was ended up in the net.
He actually made his Palace debut against Villa a few years previously in a 1-1 draw.
But we dismiss him. I mean, we just think he's the clown in the pyjama bottoms. But he did look like a guy who's actually he's lived a bit of a life, and he's a kind of a decent chap. I mean, career-wise, he's the oldest player to play in the European Championships as well. I remember this one. He was like over 40, wasn't he, in the last one?
Yeah. He beat Lothar Matthäus's record from Euro 2000, so it's not a bad company to keep.
He was never a bad keeper, though. I mean, he had a good career at Palace, didn't they? And they liked him there.
Yeah, he had kind of...
one of these sort of quirky keepers.
He kind of made his name in German football. Before Palace, it was Hertha Berlin. And then after his... he did the old Palace, West Ham, where he never actually played. Then Villa, then played a few games for Burnley over two seasons. Before going back to Germany, didn't quite work out at Leverkusen, but then 1860 Munich, he played a big bunch of games there as well. Before returning back for a few couple of games, well, four games, I think it was, for Fulham.
And then going back to his childhood club again.
Yeah, a lot of these guys do that appear on underrated or overrated. There's always this perfect sense, especially if they're overseas players, there's this symmetry where they end up playing for the club they started at, which should give you immunity. You get to be overrated.
Yeah, they get full marks for a loyalty on Top Trumps.
Get a loyalty bonus, yeah. It's like a joker. Anything else to... what's he up to now?
Well, sadly...
This is recent news.
This is very recent news, yes. Only last week, he had adopted a tiger at the Budapest Zoo. It was like the old eldest tiger at the Budapest Zoo. So he adopted him in memory of
What was the tiger called?
The tiger was called Norby. So Norby the tiger, he adopted him, and you know, everything was good, and unfortunately Norby passed away last week. So poor Gabor's been heartbroken, and you know, had a tribute to him on social media and things like that.
So he's like the Tiger King of Hungary, is he not?
Well, it's some same fashion sense as the Tiger King, but
the tiger, old Norby, had been living in Budapest since 2004. I think he's 18 years old, the tiger. I don't know what the...
Tiger years,
how long you go for. But the good news is there's five cubs. What was Norby's wife called?
Neva.
Norby and Neva. It's quite cool. I like that.
Yeah, but we're doing him a disservice because he's a bit of a businessman as well in Hungary, so... He fronts a company which runs like a national penalty kick competition, and he uses goalkeepers from his sort of goalkeeping school to be the goalkeepers in the competition. But this is sort of regional and nationwide, so you pay to enter the competition. You know, it's almost like sudden death immediately. It's like last man standing as far as penalty kicks go, and the sort of the prize money is based on, you know, how many people enter. So
is this Hungary's top reality TV show?
Well, it's... I was thinking more a bit of a pyramid scheme, but
It's called top bins.
No, but I mean, it serves a dual purpose. I mean, it makes a bit of money and also gets his students, his goalkeeping students, to get some sort of practical experience as well. So he's clever, switched on.
Yeah.
Get them saving penalties when there's money on the line.
There's one question left. Underrated or overrated, Mr. Corelli?
He has to be overrated. I can't get past the jogging bottoms. If you were playing against him and you seen jogging bottoms lining up against you in the other net, you'd be thinking, today's my lucky day. Just imagine Ollie Watkins' face light up if he saw
you know
that.
You got a chance, didn't you?
Yeah. I can't forgive him for watching that game against the United. Cahill Ridgewell playing fantastic. And
you would think if he was good enough, he'd have got a permanent contract. So
thinking we're going to nick a draw here, and it just squirmed through his bloody pajama bottoms, and that was the end of the game. I think it was injury time as well. Yeah. Another late United winner against us. Who knew such things would be so regular? Overrated. Five games.
Never had a chance,
but I think sounds like a decent guy and an eccentric guy by all accounts. And
helped us out in a tight jam, so thanks.
And the problem is with football nowadays, there's less and less of these kind of characters that enriches the game overall. Right, before we go, thank you very much for listening, and special thanks to the My Old Man Said patrons for supporting the show as well. Can't remember if I gave you a shout out in the last show, so big shout outs or shout outs again to Peter Reed and Paul Russell for signing up as My Old Man Said patrons. If you sign up as a My Old Man Said patron, you get access to Match Club, where we meet on match days, and probably be doing that through the Euros and maybe pre-season games as well. So it's worth getting on board, because that's our inner circle and where most of the fun is in the Moms universe. And also you get access to the Moms podcast channel, which has a few little nuggets coming up in the next week. So please do go to myomansaid.com and click on the Patreon link to get more information and sign up there. All right, thank you very much. This is the last week of the 2021 season and the return of Villa Park.
Should be fun.
So until then, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.